Shell Oil had to postpone its Arctic drilling for a full year after one of its oil rigs ran aground off the Alaska coast this winter. But Shell's efforts to open a new frontier of oil exploration in the Arctic Ocean continues with work conducted in Puget Sound. The oil giant passed a key test with federal regulators last month in the waters off of Anacortes, Washington. John Ryan has more from Seattle station KUOW.
It took several tries, and neither Shell nor the federal government announced the results, but a contractor successfully deployed Shell's Arctic oil spill containment system last month in Samish Bay. Crews from Superior Energy Services lowered a steel dome over the side of Shell's Arctic Challenger barge. They anchored the dome in 150 feet of water and successfully sucked up seawater at a rate of about 2,000 gallons a minute. That's what the dome's supposed to do if a blown-out well gushes oil and gas from the bottom of the Arctic Ocean. Earlier tests of the containment dome had gone badly. In September, the 20-foot dome wound up crushed like a beer can. In an email, Nicholas Pardee with the Federal Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement said the spill system handled more than twice the volume of oil that's expected in a worst-case well blowout. Pardee did not respond to KUOW's requests to interview either of the federal officials who were on board the Arctic Challenger, nor did he provide the requested documentation of the test results. On his first day in office, President Barack Obama issued a memo ordering federal agencies to make his administration the most transparent ever.
The way to make government responsible is to hold it accountable. And the way to make government accountable is to make it transparent so that the American people can know exactly what decisions are being made, how they're being made, and whether their interests are being well served.
But journalists and open government advocates complain that many agencies, from the EPA to the FDA, didn't seem to get the memo. It can be difficult or impossible to get many Obama administration officials to answer questions. Curtis Smith of Shell Alaska declined to comment on the successful test of the oil spill system, except to say that Shell has a 10-day information blackout before its quarterly earnings reports. I'm John Ryan in Seattle.
The price of Brent crude oil is $100.64 a barrel this morning. West Texas Intermediate crude is at $89.42 a barrel. Zinc is currently down, currently at 84 cents a pound. Lead is also down at 91 cents a pound. Gold currently at up $15 at $1,429 an ounce. The city of Hoonah wants to include the convicted murderer of two police officers in an ongoing civil suit stemming from the incident. Haley Tokuoka, widow of officer Matthew Tokuoka, filed a suit last August alleging that Sergeant Anthony Wallace was negligent in breaching his duty of care to the Tokuoka family. She also alleged that the city was negligent in the training and supervision of Wallace. The response, recently filed by the city of Hoonah, names John Marvin Jr. as a third-party co-defendant in the case. It asserted that Wallace was not negligent and did not cause the damage claimed by Haley Tokuoka. It also asked that Haley Tokuoka's lawsuit against the city be dismissed and any fault or award of damages be allocated to Marvin. Earlier this month, Marvin was sentenced to two consecutive 99-year prison terms for the deaths of Wallace and Tokuoka. He was convicted during a jury trial in Juneau last November for the shootings that claimed the lives of the officers in August of 2010. The Southeast Alaska sea otter population, well, more than doubled over the past decade. That's according to an estimate from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which released a draft of its revised stock assessment last week. As Matt Lichtenstein reports, the numbers have been out for a while, but the public now has a formal chance to comment on them.
The draft estimates a total of 25,712 otters in the region. The number is based on aerial surveys done by researchers in 2010 and 2011. That compares with 10,563 otters in 2003. The latest numbers won't come as a surprise to many who have been following this issue. Federal scientists had already presented results from their population studies in public presentations and news reports over the past couple of years. The revised stock assessment formalizes the numbers and provides a 90-day opportunity for public comment. According to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service spokesperson Bruce Woods, the agency will consider and incorporate public input before the draft is finalized.
Any input on habitat, degradation or improvement of habitat, any additional information, be it traditional ecological knowledge or personal observation that might help us refine our numbers, any additional information on human-caused mortality or injury that we may not be taking into account.
The Russian fur trade wiped out the Southeast Sea Otter population by the early 20th century. The state of Alaska reintroduced about 400 of the animals to Southeast in the 1960s, and they've thrived. According to the draft assessment, the region's otter population appears to be growing at a rate of 12% to 14% per year.
But what we're seeing is an indication of a population that is recovering and that is continuing to move into habitat that it formerly occupied and has probably not finished the process of recolonizing habitat that it once occurred in.
The otter's rapid population growth and voracious appetite for shellfish has been a major concern for commercial crabbers, dive fishermen, and subsistence harvesters for years. They've seen once productive fishing grounds for Dungeness crabs, sea cucumbers, and other species depleted after the otters move in. Petersburg Assembly member and commercial fisherman Kurt Wolhuter chairs a local committee that's drafted a resolution on the issue for the rest of the Assembly to consider. It takes the federal government to task for not developing a current plan to manage the otter population.
There is no management plan for the sea otters, and they're out of control at this point because they're eating, some of the crab fishermen out of house and home, and it's evident by fewer and fewer participants every year, and without the management tool for the sea otters, I'm afraid that at some point, that there will be no Dungeness fisheries, and that's the thing that really concerns everybody here.
The draft population assessment is available through a link on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's website. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Chino Symphony conductor Kyle Wiley-Pickett says news that he's taken a job with the Topeka Symphony got ahead of discussions with the other orchestras that he directs, but he confirms he will continue to lead the Capital City Symphony through the 2013-2014 season. The board of directors also hopes he will help with the transition to a new conductor during the 2014-15 season. Topeka offered Pickett the job last weekend, and the Juneau Empire picked up the story from the Topeka Capital Journal, which is also owned by Morris Communications.
So that story got across the divide sooner than I was wanting it to, unfortunately.
He says he's still figuring out the implications of taking the Topeka position. He's also the director of the North State Symphony in Chico, California.
Part of the equation is just figuring out how all three of these things can work together, and if they will work together, and if they won't work together, then what will be the result? And the answer is still, I don't know.
Chino has been his second home for the last 13 years as he flew back and forth from California. The symphony performs 4 main stage concerts a year, and Pickett arrives 2 weeks before and holds several rehearsals each week. In between, resident director Todd Hunt leads rehearsals. Pickett says it's not unusual for conductors to direct a number of orchestras.
For those of us who are trying to make a career as a conductor of regional orchestras, it just seems like that's the way it has to happen, that you're usually piecing it together with a couple different orchestras. I think a lot of it has to do with the artistic experience. And one of the things that I've said for years, and I really do believe it's true, is that the fact that I'm a conductor in California makes me a better conductor for the Juneau Symphony, and the fact that I'm a conductor in Juneau makes me a better conductor for the North State Symphony.
He says he has no plans yet to move his family to Topeka.
Next year we will be in our same house in California, and I'll be flying to Topeka, and I'll be flying to Juneau, and we'll work the plans out for that in the coming weeks here.
The Topeka Symphony is a professional per-service orchestra, meaning musicians do not make a livable wage, but they do get a stipend. Juneau Symphony musicians are volunteers. Pickett says he'll have details of how his 3 conducting jobs will work together when the Juneau Symphony wraps up the current season in Juneau. And you can find out more about this story by going to our website at ktoo.org and clicking on the link to this story.